discussions over what the definition of is. But, holy hypocrite, look who's doing legalistic contortions now, parsing the language of the law not to excuse personal sexual misconduct, but to rationalize the much more crass act of official torture. Internal memos now show that all of Bush's top lawyers were straining at the bit to unleash the CIA, FBI, and military forces to break both U.S. and international laws that ban the use of torture when interrogating prisoners of war. One in particular, a 2002 memo by Jay Bybee, top legal counsel in Bush's Justice Department, went to extremes to claim that in grilling detainees, the Bushites could use practically any torture methods short of killing prisoners without violating either our own nation's torture law or the Geneva Accords. Bybee's memo went into excruciating detail to parse such terms as severe pain, imminent death, and profound mental disruption. The memo concludes that only physical pain as intense as you would expect from organ failure or death qualifies as torture. Short of that, anything goes. The same anything-goes mentality that corrupted Enron and most of corporate America now is loose at the highest levels of government. It just shows that if top officials unleash crafty lawyers to justify the most despicable actions, they will. By the way, George W. has subsequently put Bybee on the U.S. Court of Appeals, where he can apply his anything-goes mentality to all the cases that come before him. This is Jim Hightower saying, we need a president who will choose lawyers of conscience, not of convenience.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
But Bush and the Republicans could take the rejection. They counted the votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election.
Welcome back to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. And today is Tuesday. Every Tuesday here on the Inside Scoop is Election Tuesday until that most important Tuesday in November, where we choose the President of the United States and the entire House of Representatives and one-third of the Senate and many governors and mayors and such. Election Tuesday, we talk about what's going on with the election. And, of course, the biggest news, the news that came out just this morning, it's John Kerry's pick of John Edwards as his vice presidential nominee. Now, the Edwards nomination will be seen, I think, as a reach toward the center. As I mentioned, it will reach out to independents and Republicans. It will reach out to Southerners. But the Republicans, I'm sure, I'd be willing to bet. We'll find out. It's just happened. But you just watch over the next week and months ahead. If the Republicans don't try to cast John Edwards off as this rich trial lawyer, and they start to attack trial lawyers. Now, of course, John Edwards has a very modest past, a son of a mill worker, as he constantly points out. His mother worked in a general store. This is a guy who came up from nothing, and he did it by defending regular people against big corporations. Like I said, the Republicans are going to blame it all on the trial lawyers. So I'm curious to know from you, one, what do you think of the pick? Do you support John Edwards? Do you think it was a good pick as Vice President of the United States? But also, what do you think of this argument that I'm just waiting for the Republicans to throw out there that trial lawyers are evil and should be stopped, and John Edwards is one of them? The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. How are you this Election Tuesday?
I'm doing pretty well, Mark. It's good to hear from you again. Well, radio power was down. I didn't get to get your feed. But,
well, radio power's back, and I'm back, too, so I'm really glad you could come back to the show. Who is this?
Oh, this is Brian from New Jersey.
Oh, hey, Brian from New Jersey. Long-time listener, I must say. What are your thoughts on John Edwards?
Well, he was my third pick. First pick was Carroll Moseley Braun, then it went to Dean, and then Edwards. So I'm happy that he's going to be the vice presidential nominee.
Well, you didn't really think Carroll Moseley Braun had a chance, did you?
No, but you know what? As far as her policies were concerned, she was my number one pick. I have a Dean bumper sticker on my car because he was the one who I thought, if, you know, hey, the media might not bash him, he could get there, but obviously not. But I am happy to see that Edwards is the vice presidential pick for Kerry. I'm really not too worried about Bush winning the election this year. I really don't see that happening. What I'm concerned about, did you read the Associated Press article where they're saying if there's another terrorist attack, they're trying to figure out a way to postpone or cancel possible elections because of what happened in Spain? Did you get to read that?
I did read that article. I did see that. I don't see it happening. Now, maybe if a terrorist attack occurs the day of the election or the day before the election, then I think it actually could happen it could be delayed for maybe a week or two at worst. I gotta tell you, when 9/11 happened, a lot of people don't remember this, but September 11th was actually a day of an election in New York City. It was a primary election. Most people haven't, you know it, I guess, because you're from New Jersey. I don't think most people around the nation realize that. And the election was postponed, I think, for 2 weeks. Is that your recollection?
Yeah. It was 2 weeks.
I think it was 2 weeks. There are many, many things I fear and detest with the Bush administration. You know that. You're a regular listener to my show. I do think, though, that this fear that they're going to sort of indefinitely postpone elections, maybe I'm naive, but I don't think they're going to go that far. I don't think the American people would stand for it.
Well, then I'm not really too worried about Bush winning, honestly. I think the country's starting to wake up, and I think with Edwards as the running mate, we have a really good chance of winning some red states.
Yeah, I think Kerry's going to win too, but I don't want people to be complacent because we still got several months ahead of time.
And
don't be surprised, not so much. I'm not as much thinking about a terrorist attack the day before the election as the fact that on October, let's say 22nd, 2 weeks, week before the election, maybe October 12th, they're going to find Osama bin Laden suddenly.
Right.
And capture him and say, hey, look at how good we've done. Obviously, I support finding and capturing Osama bin Laden, but I think if it happens in the next few months, its timing will be extremely suspect. And that's something I think the administration is much more likely to do. I don't think the administration would, cause a terrorist attack on the United States to disrupt the election. I don't think they're that criminal. Maybe some of you do. I don't. But I do think that manipulating the timing of capturing bin Laden, that's well within this administration.
And I agree.
And that's something that's quite likely to happen. So while I agree with you that Kerry is going to win this election, it's you can never be complacent about it.
Complacency is death.
It really is. And another thing that scares me is that even though I agree with you that Kerry's going to win, If too many liberals believe Kerry's going to win, and particularly those that are left of liberal, people like yourself perhaps, Howard Dean supporters, Carroll Moseley Braun supporters, I'm not concerned about you, Brian, but I am concerned that some of your friends may pull the lever for Nader. And we've seen that even in an election where Al Gore wins, because Al Gore won the election, if enough people pull it for Nader, that gives the Republicans the chance to steal the election as they did in 2000.
Trust me, none of my friends are voting for Nader. I've been completely opposed, and I've told everybody, not even just friends, that a vote for Nader is a vote for Bush, because it's not equal representation in this country. It's winner takes all.
That's exactly right. And if you want to support your Green Party or an independent in your local elections, you have my blessing. That I mean, when I think of the mayorship of San Francisco, I'm actually glad the Democrat won in this case. But the Green ran very close second, and that's fine. That's local issues. But there is no third party of any substance in the national elections, in the federal elections. And people have to understand that's how the system works. If they don't like the system, they can work to change the system. They can petition to amend the Constitution. I know that's not easy, and I know we're not a perfect democracy by any stretch. But this is what we've got, and we've got to work with it. And so as long as we don't fear complacency, then I'm very glad to hear your optimism, Brian, that Kerry will win, because I think he's going to win, too. I think there's a lot of momentum here. I also think Edwards gives it an optimism, a fresh face. It's very important. Whenever I heard, for example, Bill Clinton talk about his book as he's come out. In fact, he ends his book with saying, you know, don't stop thinking about tomorrow. And I got to tell you, every time I hear that song, I don't know about you, Brian, every time I hear that song on the radio, I think of Bill Clinton, and I just remember the nostalgia, the belief in that time that anything could happen. You know, don't stop thinking about tomorrow. This was a man who cared about the future, who cared about, you know, wasn't going to take all our tax money and make the youth pay twice as much. I just felt like there was a future with Bill Clinton. And one of the things I hope that the Edwards ticket brings is this sense of the future, this sense of youth and optimism that really has been missing from, certainly from George Bush.
Now, the one thing that I see about Kerry's campaign is so far he's pretty positive, which is good. I like a positive campaign. But why, how come, in your opinion, how come he hasn't come out and really torn Bush apart? Because I think he can. I think there's plenty of things that he can just tear him up on, and it would completely ruin Bush's campaign. But so far, Kerry's been very, nice about it, the whole situation.
Well, I think the reason is that, frankly, so many people are tearing apart George Bush right now. That John Kerry doesn't need to. He can sort of stay above the fray. We've got Al Gore giving beautiful, ferocious speeches that are very powerful. You've got Michael Moore's movie, Fahrenheit 9/11. You've got Clinton on the circuit, who is implicitly tearing up Bush, not so much directly, but just by us remembering what a decent president was like. And I think John Kerry is trying to stay a bit above the fray. I think it's a good idea, at least for now, given that, for example, Bush has all these negative ads against John Kerry. A recent statistics show that more than 75% of his ads, three-quarters of the Bush ads, are anti-Kerry, and about, I think it was 17%, somewhat, about one in five of Kerry's ads were anti-Bush. And, I think this country has pretty much already made its decision on Bush. They've rejected George Bush. A good majority of the country does not want to see him reelected. So to me, Kerry's goal now, I mean, I think whenever you have an incumbent running for reelection for president, the first question in people's minds are, do we want that person to have another 4 years? And if we do, it doesn't matter who's running against them. I mean, it wasn't, the reason Clinton won in 96 had nothing to do with Bob Dole. Nothing to do with Bob Dole. They wanted Clinton again. Similarly, in 84, I was no Reagan fan, but most of the country was, and it wasn't Mondale's fault. But I think that when you reject the president of the United States, that's when you go and you look at the alternative and you say, can the alternative fill in that role? Can he be presidential? And so I think Kerry's goal over the next few months, particularly in the convention, which is, after all, coming up in just a few weeks, is to define himself, to say who John Kerry is, rather than to bring down Bush. And I got to say, I think that for now, I think that's the right strategy.
I agree. What I find funny is that you watch a lot of these, but a lot of people watch CNN and Fox, and they see all these polls, that the polls are 50-50. I don't know about you, but when I go out and talk to people, I don't find many Bush supporters at all in my area. I mean, I'm like...
But you're in New Jersey.
Right, true.
I have no question that New Jersey will go for John Kerry by more than 10 points. I'm not worried about New Jersey. But there are people in the red states. One of the reasons, in fact, why I like to have on this show from time to time people from the red states, like the Utah chairman of the College Republicans that I have on from time to time, is to show that there are people that very much disagree with you and me, Brian, and they're not too many living in New Jersey. But I don't know if you've traveled to the red states recently. I think that it's largely, at least with the diehard supporters of Bush, it's got nothing to do with his policies. It has to do with the fact that they're fundamentalist Christians and they support his dismantling of the separation between church and state. And so for them, he's called by God and he can do nothing wrong. And that, I think, accounts for, probably at least a third, maybe 40% of the nation that's no question going to vote for George Bush. And it doesn't matter what he does. It all has to do with this very strong stream of fundamentalism that exists in America.
Very recently, I actually had there were a couple of teenagers who were coming up here from Georgia, Maryland, and Virginia, and they were selling magazines in the neighborhood. And I always bring up politics, no matter to who, and I brought it up to them. And their main reason for being a Bush supporter was that, we were fighting the terrorists and we were protecting America. And after I laid it out to them for about 15 minutes on how we're creating more terrorists, they kind of changed their mind. So,
well, that's actually a very good point, Brian, and that is that the people who liked Bush because he was strong on terror are now learning the difference. You know, Bush's opinion ratings were, oh, I think they were above 90 right after 9/11. They were in the 70s when the war with Iraq began. Now, of course, they're below 50. But what's most interesting is that if you look at the polls that showed who would do a better job in the war against terrorism, the Republicans love to point out all through the Democratic primary season that even though people, Americans, supported Kerry more on the health care, on the environment, on big business, even on taxes, they supported Kerry's position over Bush's position. Republicans were saying, hey, but look at the war on terror. And at that time, 6 months ago, you had 20 to 30 point difference, people supporting Bush over Kerry with regard to fighting terrorism. It was like 63-33, and then it went down to, you know, maybe 60-40. But today, Kerry actually beats Bush on that front. And I think the reason is because as Abu Ghraib has come out, as the war in Iraq has been seen as not a mission accomplished, not a walk in the park, as Richard Clark's testimony came out, as the 9/11 Commission's report came out and people learned about the lies that Bush made about connections between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda, people are starting to see, yes, that we face more terrorism now than we did if we had a more responsible leader in charge. And so I think you're absolutely right. I'll tell you, it was a lot harder a year ago when I began my broadcast, and I was talking about Cheney going down to the CIA and convincing people to change national intelligence estimates. When I made those allegations a year ago, people were just didn't believe me. They just didn't believe me. I said, look, I've heard from CIA agents. My sources tell me this. You know, here's what people in Congress are telling me. And people just didn't believe that a vice president would go down and manipulate intelligence data. Today, I don't have trouble convincing people of that. People, I think, have learned what this administration's all about.
Well, it's sad because, I mean, that is, why would people want to believe such a cynical thing?
Well, they don't want to believe it. I don't blame them. I didn't want to believe it.
I totally agree. I don't know if you ever heard of a talk show host. His name is Alex Jones. He goes into a he's pretty radical. He'll say that, you know, the government is the one that are committing these terrorist attacks in order to put us into fear. And I'm not sure if I want to go that far. But
I don't go that far.
But again, people, they don't want to hear that because it's such a cynical view. We need to uplift people and say, look, why don't we get somebody in there that can help us out of the situation rather than focus on the bad and just keep, you know, playing in the muck, and that's not where we want to be.
And that's why I think John Edwards' optimism is really good.
I
think
agree.
America already knows. And frankly, with people like Howard Dean, we're instrumental in this. Instrumental. When Howard Dean said, I don't know that America is any safer now that Saddam Hussein is gone, he was raked over the coals in the press. How could he say such a thing? That's ridiculous. And now that thing that was considered way, way left, way ridiculous, even the Democrats couldn't follow that, today I think is understood by everyone as being the truth. I don't know that we're any safer with Saddam Hussein gone.
Definitely not.
At best, we're equal. And I think many would argue that at least Americans are worse off.
Another country started bombing us in order to, you know, liberate us from George Bush, and they were killing 10,000 civilians.
Right.
I think I'd turn into a terrorist against them because that would piss me off.
That's actually a great example because I, for one, have never accepted the legitimacy of this president. I, for one, have always written about, you know, the Supreme Court violating the Constitution to get this guy to be president. I've been very consistent on that, and yet I would not want another country to come in here and invade and free us from the illegitimate president we have in George W. Bush. I think that's something for we Americans to work out, and so I think that's a great analogy.
Especially
hey, Brian,
when freeing us means killing people. So.
Exactly. That's been a great call. I really appreciate it. And
thank
call
you,
in again.
Thanks for being back.
No problem. And listen, if you do have trouble on Radio Power, you can always check at my website, www.radioinsidescoop.com. Basically, they use different streaming technologies. My website uses one. Radio Power uses two others. If it doesn't work on one site, try the other site. RadioPower.org gives you a lot of wonderful progressive talk shows. You can check out Tom Hartman as well as myself. And, of course, you can comment on my blog and so forth at RadioInsideScoop.com. I want to come back to this discussion of lawyers and whether people hate them or not, whether John Edwards is a good pick or whether he'll take the ticket down with criticism of trial lawyers. I don't think so, but I'll tell you why when we come back. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment at RadioInsideScoop.com. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The Maytag Corporation and the United Auto Workers Local 997 reached a tentative agreement late last week, ending a four-week walkout. Maintenance workers at its Newton, Iowa facility walked out after negotiations broke down over the company's attempt to reduce health benefits. Maytag representatives had argued that health benefits were eroding the company's bottom line. Many of the workers expressed that the four-year contract agreed to on Thursday wasn't the best option. There was concern amongst the more than 1,500 employees that if the union and company could not come to an agreement, that some jobs would be lost. Maytag recently announced the closure of a factory in Galesburg, Illinois, and plans to move some company jobs to Mexico.
On July 1st, the California Labor Federation celebrated the enactment of the nation's first ever paid family leave legislation, which guarantees most California workers a paycheck even if they leave work to care for a loved one. For example, employees can collect 55% of their salary, up to $728 per week, to care for a new baby, a seriously ill parent, or domestic partner. Labor leaders are hoping this legislation will set a precedent for the rest of the country.
Summer travelers to England should be prepared for potential delays at the country's airports from a baggage handler strike. The work stoppage is intended to force Avians, the services group that employs more than 2,300 workers at 17 of the country's airports, to revisit a 2.5% pay increase offer that was rejected earlier this year.
After months of haggling between the New York City Police Department and a range of groups seeking to hold demonstrations at the upcoming Republican National Convention, the city finally granted 10 permits. One recipient is the New York City Central Labor Council. They're planning a massive rally outside Madison Square Garden to protest the Bush administration's anti-labor policies. United for Peace and Justice is still waiting for a permit to hold an anti-war rally in Central Park on the eve of the convention, but officials are refusing, saying too many people in the park would hurt the grass.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A multinational study of workplace benefits conducted by the Harvard School of Public Health ranks the United States near the bottom in several categories. For example, 160 of the 168 countries analyzed offer paid time off to new mothers as a matter of government policy. 139 countries offer guaranteed sick leave, of which 84% offer at least a week off. And more than three dozen countries even guarantee extra benefits like paid time off for fathers and the option to breastfeed at work. The U.S. provides nothing of the sort.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
In November of 2004, we've got to get out the vote and even the score. When the GOP is leaving, I hope that they don't hit their heads on the door.
Welcome back to Election Tuesday here on the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're discussing the pick of John Kerry, just announced this morning, his vice presidential pick of John Edwards to be on the ticket. I've gotten quite a lot of comments from you folks on email. I'm going to read a lot of them to you, both at my email, which goes to comment@radioinsidescoop.com, and also a lot of comments on my blog. If you don't know about my weblog, you really should check it out at www.radioinsidescoop.com, because when you make a comment on my blog, it's not just a comment to me that I may or may not have a chance to read on air. It's also a comment to each other. It's a way of having the whole Inside Scoop community talk to each other. And you've really got a lot of interesting things to say. I'm going to read some of the comments now from the blog. I got a comment that says, can Kerry be accused of playing not to lose rather than playing to win? Perhaps that's the best strategy to play when the outcome of the election will probably be determined by some foreign policy event looming in the near future. Betting on a Bush screw-up is a good percentage tactic. Picking Edwards as VP is a real vanilla move and probably not a bad one. I understand that Joe Biden is needed in the Senate, but he would have been my ballsy pick. But one listener responds, and I really like this. This is from Benedict at large. Benedict writes, I asked my fundamentalist email pal from North Carolina what she thought of John Edwards when he first entered the race. She said she hated him. I told her that was a good enough recommendation for me. And Rod responds that takes exception to the blogger who wrote it was a vanilla issue. As Rod writes, it was widely known that Kerry and Edwards were nowhere near as close as Kerry and Gephardt were. That being said, ballsy is not a quality that wins swing voters. Again, if you write to my blog, you can write to each other and not just to me. Got another comment from John. John writes, good choice for VP. He, meaning Edwards, may have run centrist in the primaries, but he and Dennis Kucinich, the closest thing the Dems had to a Green running in the primaries, apparently became good enough friends on the campaign trail. I hope Dennis Kucinich gives some strong support to the ticket and helps energize the Greens into swallowing their pride and going Dem this year. The downside, expect the GOP to harp on the high rate of missed votes between the two. Of course, the GOP would have the bronze balls to call these two deserters, knowing everyone will give the draft dodgers in power a free pass. I got some more comments that I want to read to you. I got a comment from Ron from Lake Worth, who took exception to my comment that Kerry doesn't need the base. Well, I didn't say, Ron, that he doesn't need the base. What I said is that the base is unified behind him. So I just want to be clear about that. Maybe it's a slight difference, but let me read on. Ron says, from Lake Worth, Florida, Kerry doesn't need the base. He certainly does. Many of us lefties have been watching him real closely, waiting for him to reach out to us and not take us for granted. That said, I think the Edwards choice was right on target. Edwards' To America's theme rang well with us, I guess meaning us lefties, and I think Kerry certainly had us at least partly in mind with his selection of Edwards. I agree with you that Edwards also has great appeal for the center, but he is certainly someone that the left will look forward to working with. I am really glad to hear you say that, Ron. I really am. I do think that Edwards' To America's theme is precisely the kind of theme that people on the left have been focused on for a long time. We shouldn't live in an America that doesn't allow equal opportunity for everyone. And when you look at a guy like George W. Bush, a person who had no success based on his own merit, who constantly was failing in business and bailed out by his family and by the Saudi Arabians, it should be clear. And you look at someone like Dick Cheney, who made his wealth, again, trading on his connections to government to get a CEO of a corporation that used those connections to trade with Saddam Hussein. You know, these people give capitalism a bad name. I am a capitalist. I believe in capitalism. I also believe in socialism. You need a combination of both. I don't think pure capitalism or pure socialism works. Pure capitalism means that no one at the bottom ever has a chance of success. And pure socialism means that people who are successful aren't rewarded. So I'm not a fan of either. I think we need a combination of the two. But if you look at capitalism, if you look at the belief that we need equal opportunity for all, but then let people rise or fall as their success dictates, again, I couldn't think of greater examples than a guy like John Edwards, who grew up poor, or a guy like Bill Clinton, for that matter, who grew up poor and made a tremendous success of themselves, and then people like George Bush and Dick Cheney, who were, you know, born on third base and thought they'd hit a triple. Actually, George Bush was born on home plate, given that he's failed in everything he did, even failed to win the election of 2000, but again was installed by his dad and his friends in everything he's ever done. I guess my point is that when people criticize John Kerry as being someone who is wealthy or who is married into wealth, there's a big difference between people who are married into wealth who still care about the other America and those that don't. I'm not anti-wealthy. I get accused, Democrats in general get accused of attacking the rich as if we're out to get rich people. No, I like rich people. In fact, George Soros, as a rich person who's doing a lot of good for the Democrats right now, it's not rich people. It's the idea of rich people who don't have the understanding that their privilege is a gift. There are rich people who give back. I mean, look at the Kennedys, very wealthy, but a family that's always understood that you can't just take the wealth and build a beautiful home and, live off off of others. You have to give something back. And John Kerry has always understood that. John Edwards understands that. While people like George Bush and Dick Cheney are just helping their powerful friends become more powerful. And that's why I think John Edwards' talk about two Americas is precisely the kind of vision that we need in this country, to talk about the fact that, everyone should have an equal opportunity. I got another email from Skyler in Paris, France. I love that people in Paris, France are listening to the broadcast. I got to tell you, I got listeners in Canada, Taiwan, England, France, the Netherlands, Switzerland. I think one other country wrote in. But Skyler, who's listening live in Paris, France, writes, "Hi, Mark. I hope that Edwards can use his gift of gab to make up for Kerry's lack of it. I've been concerned about Kerry's intellectually vacuous rhetoric. It reminds me of Gore before he came out and speaks now with a lot more passion. Kerry has a way of making a righteous statement of little substance, then too often waits for applause. He needs a bulldog to speak up about the ugly realities of the war, for example. I hope they use Edwards to fill that gap. Keep up your crucial work, Mark." Well, Skyler, I guess I'm agreeing too much, but I'm afraid I agree with you there too. Kerry is not as good a speaker as John Edwards. That's to be understood. John Edwards is a trial lawyer. We trial lawyers, if we're not good speakers, we're not going to be very successful. I guess John Edwards is a better trial lawyer than I, so maybe he's a better speaker than I, but as a former trial lawyer, I know how important it is to make a persuasive case to convince a jury, to convince a judge of the rightness of your cause. I don't believe that Kerry is intellectually vacuous, even if some of his rhetoric is not as strong as it could be. Just like Skyler, I believe Gore would have been a very strong president, even though he didn't have the same proficiency at speaking well as Bill Clinton did. So I think those are sort of separate talents, whether you can speak well or not, and whether you're sort of intellectually there or not. Look at George Bush, who doesn't speak well and is also not an intellectual, someone who doesn't care about the way the world works. So I agree with your point, Skyler, and I do think Edwards will definitely help Kerry in the speaking well and bringing big crowds. I think that is an important skill. I got an email from Ben, my longtime, most frequent conservative listener, who says, "Mark, where are your stats to back up the claim there are more terrorists now? The 9/11 Commission says just the opposite." Ben, I haven't seen the 9/11 Commission say just the opposite. I suggest that you email me what you think, what the 9/11 Commission said. My stats, well, they don't take a census of terrorists. They don't go around and say, "All right, are you a terrorist now?" But if you look at opinion polls, it's clear that many, many more people all across the globe, and not just in Arab nations, in European nations, in Canada, more and more people distrust and dislike the United States because of Bush's policies. And I think that leads to more terrorism. In fact, the State Department put out a report showing that we're at the highest level of terrorism since they've done the reports in the 60s. They said we were at the lowest, and then they admit that they lied about it. Oops, made a mistake, corrected the mistake. We are at the highest, according to the State Department. So I don't know what you're reading with the 9/11 Commission, but do me a favor. You know how to email me. You email me, I'll read the report, and I'll talk about it on air. We have to take one more break, but when we come back, I do want to talk a little bit more about John Edwards as a lawyer, as a trial lawyer, and how I think the Republicans will try to use this against John Edwards and why I think it will fail. So if you want to call in this Election Tuesday, you'll have one more chance. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, and we'll be right back.
Take the A train. Ride that Wabash cannonball. Hear the clickety-clack of the Orange Blossom Special. Trains are more than a part of our history. They're a rich part of our culture. But are they a part of our future? I'm not talking here about the enormous potential of long-distance trains. Upgrading Amtrak and building a top-of-the-line high-speed train system between our population centers. Rather, I'm focused today on the promise of rail travel within our great metro areas. I've ridden these local systems in the Bay Area, Chicago, Washington, D.C., and elsewhere. They're simple, handy, efficient, fast, inexpensive, and a joyous way to get to where you're going. They also move hundreds of thousands of people a day without creating traffic jams or smog. And they create thousands of good jobs at good wages. Here's what one observer says. Mass transit is an excellent substitute for roads. These are not the words of some anti-auto Earth Firster, but of Paul Wyrick, an icon of right-wing thinking. To him, urban train systems make all kinds of sense and are a legitimate focus for federal, state, and local spending. Public demand for these systems is strong. Ridership is up 21% in the last 5 years. New systems in Dallas, Denver, Salt Lake City, and elsewhere are exceeding expectations, and there's a backlog of 200 local transit projects seeking federal matching funds. There's the problem. The Bushites, tagged by Wyrick as the most anti-rail administration in our country's history of mass transit, is trying to gut federal support. In their zeal for fiscal conservatism, writes Wyrick, they are prepared to scuttle one of the most successful government programs of all time. This is Jim Hightower saying, Missing the Train, a new report by the Sierra Club, highlights projects in Tampa Bay, Portland, Houston, Milwaukee, and elsewhere endangered by Bush's cuts. Get a copy, 202-675-7915.
LendingTree.com presents How to Get Out from Under Debt. First, take an average guy.
Hello.
Then add some credit card debt, a car payment, and a student loan.
Ow.
To get out from under all this debt, get a debt consolidation loan from LendingTree.com, where banks compete and you choose the loan that's right for you. Call 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com.
Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply. See website for details.
38%. 46%. 42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
We got a $500 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.
Welcome back to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop. We've just got a few minutes left to talk about kicking out the Republicans, as Donnie Daly's song says. It's Election Tuesday. And we've been focused on John Edwards, the pick of John Kerry for vice president. And as usual on the Inside Scoop, I like to be one of the first to talk about a story. And I'm sure you're going to hear the story over the next week or so, just as we were some of the first to pick up on Clinton and some of the more important things going on, like, one, there was the Mooney story, which I'm proud that we broke a week in advance. And, of course, more important things like the manipulation of intelligence and other things that we reported first here on The Scoop. But I want you to watch over the next few days as they talk about John Edwards. And you just watch. I'd be willing to bet that this morphs, this changes into an attack on trial lawyers. And as a former trial lawyer myself, I am just waiting for the attack. Because as much as the Republic attacks these greedy trial lawyers who make millions of dollars on contingent fees, when the true facts about what lawyers do, particularly trial lawyers, particularly those who take cases on contingent fees, when all of this is known, I think the public tends to support the people who would get these awards. You know, when I worked as a lawyer, I had dozens of people come up to me wanting me to take a case on contingency that I wouldn't take because I didn't think they had a strong case. And the only way you make money as a contingent lawyer, in fact, is if the person has a strong case. If you work for a major corporation, you don't get paid based on contingency. You don't get a third of the winnings. Never. No, they pay you hourly, and they pay quite a high rate. So if you've got a case of a baby whose arm is and intestines are caught in a waiting pool drain, the people opposing them, those lawyers, they're paid by the hour. So a corporation doesn't need a strong case in order to sue or in order to defend suits. I mean, there are cases where Nabisco sues Keebler over the claim that their chocolate chip cookies have more chocolate chips in them. That was a major case, cost, millions of dollars in legal fees, But that one isn't brought out to the public because that's business, and Republicans support lawyers when they support business. The point I'm trying to make is that when you have personal injury lawyers who are often attacked as the lowest form of lawyer, they are working based on contingency, and therefore they won't take a case. It's not in their financial interest to take a case unless it's a strong case. Otherwise, they won't be paid. I expect people to bring up the old saw about McDonald's. Every time you hear that about discussion of lawyers and trial lawyers, everyone brings up, oh, the woman that got millions of dollars because she spilled coffee in her lap and burned herself. So I just want to briefly give you the facts of that case so that when your Republican friend comes and says that we need caps on trial lawyers, we need to stop letting people sue their HMOs and so forth, I want you to tell them the true story about McDonald's. And this isn't my favorite case. This is one of the most extreme cases out there. But what happened? You have a woman who did spill her McDonald's coffee and had to have a skin graft. She spent several weeks in the hospital due to these third-degree burns. And she offered to settle for $10,000. $10,000, McDonald's refused. She only sued as a last resort, right? That's how we use the judicial system. And she originally did win $2.9 million, but it was reduced by a judge, just like most of these judgments are, to $480,000. In fact, she settled for even less. The settlement is not known, but it was less than $480,000. But the important thing is that McDonald, which had ignored more than 700 similar complaints, 700 people had complained about their coffee burning them. McDonald's just ignored them. Now, they don't serve near-boiling coffee. Neither do its competitors. Now, Stay-Rite Corporation doesn't have drains that suck out babies' intestines, all right? They make sure that those drains are protected. What we do as lawyers and what people like John Edwards do is actually protect the public from corporations that don't care enough about their welfare. So when you hear the Republicans giving it to John Edwards, you just remember that if you need a trial lawyer, you're going to want one around because they protect your rights. And if you don't agree with their case, they'll lose. They'll lose and they won't want to take another case. And that's what the legal system is all about. Listen, we've got to close up now, but tomorrow is a very, very important program. I don't want you to miss it. A lot of people have missed the news of what's just been discovered. Just as Bush allowed a number of Saudi terrorists, including members of the Bin Laden family, to leave after September 11th, just recently he did the exact same thing. He traded known terrorists from Guantanamo Bay. Again, he's torturing the innocents, but he traded known terrorists from Guantanamo Bay to free some British hostages. This story has gotten very little press, but you won't want to miss hearing it on the Inside Scoop tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Tune in then, and if you like the Inside Scoop, do me a favor. Don't keep it a secret. This is Mark Levine signing off.